We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Three guys who combined to play 15 seasons in the National Football League trenches. Well, two guys. And Mackie, who didn't do sh**. He just sits there and looks pretty.
This is the O-Line Committee.
It's where an idiot fan gets to ask dumb questions to two former NFL offensive linemen. And this is going to be a juicy one today, I feel like. You guys, we did some film stuff that'll be up on the YouTube channel. And I can sense during NFL cut week here that you guys, especially Jeremiah, who runs an NFL agency, for those of you that are new, you guys are a little on edge here, I feel like.
Slight edge, slight caffeine addiction, haven't slept great the last few nights. Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, man. Cut weekend is, especially the way they did it now, where when we played, they used to go 4 preseason games. After the third, you cut to 75, and then you cut down to your 53. This year, they just did one foul reaper swoop, just thin the herd, right? And, I mean, it's been craziness. The waiver wires got 1,200 names on it. I mean, it is just bananas right now, which is why, I mean, you heard it. If you watch the film studies, you'll know that I had to take a few calls, and there's a good chance I'll have to take a few calls during this one too, because it's that time of year where you're getting random phone numbers that call you and you don't know who they are, and you just have to pick up the phone.
That's the excitement of this episode right now, is that at any moment, literally, Jeremiah is going to take an important football phone call from like a general manager guy. Is it general managers?
Pro scouts. Yeah.
And he'll just bolt for like 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, I told this on the film review, but for those of you that don't listen to the film review, I just got off the phone. I have a client that's driving. He got released by Detroit. He's driving back to Nebraska right now, 'cause that's where he's from and where he lives. And I had a team call me. I can't say the team right now, but I had a team call me and they were like, "Hey, we want to bring him in for a workout tomorrow morning." And I'm like, "Okay, well," he's driving back, and they're like, "Well, we need him here." And I was like, "Hold on." I call my client. I'm like, "Hey, where are you?" He's like, "I'm driving through Kalamazoo right now." I was like, "So you're like an hour and a half from Chicago?" He goes, "Yeah, I'll be in Chicago in an hour and a half." I go, "Park your car, find it, get to the airport. You're going to fly out of Chicago to go work out." Called back the team. They're like, "All right, where's he coming from?" I go, "Chicago." I'm like, "Cool, sounds good. We'll have him here tomorrow." They don't care about how his car gets there. They don't care what happens to his car. They need someone to come in and work out tomorrow morning. Not tomorrow afternoon. God. Tomorrow morning. And so if he gets signed by that team, he's gonna have to figure out, well, my car's in Chicago and all my crap, so hopefully I can come back and get it, or tell my girlfriend mom. Or dad or mom, like, "Hey, mom, road trip."
Hey,
but I mean,
I'll
that is what's happening. That's what's happening right now. I mean, awesome. I was on the phone with a team last night at 11:30 p.m. Central, 12:30 p.m. their time, talking about yes or no to a practice squad spot.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no sleep. No sleep throughout this entire weekend that goes on for any agent or really any player either that's on the bubble.
And so while Jay's talking to the teams, I know I mostly get the phone calls from the players talking about what happened, what went wrong, what's going to happen next, stuff like that. I was just talking to one of the guys about it. Cutthroat, bro.
I mean, and here, you want to know what's even more crazy about it is a lot of times the coaches in the front offices are on completely different pages. I had two clients this go around right now that had their exit meetings. I got the call from the front office that was like, "Hey, we're going to release so-and-so. We kind of think we want to bring him back on our practice squad. We're not sure." You know, they hedge their bets, right? Like, and you can tell the difference when someone's like, "Oh, he's coming back," mm-hmm. right? Like, "We're going to have him," or like the, "Well, we'll see what's out there," right? And so then I get a call from both players. They're like, "Hey, I sat down with the GM, the head coach, my position coach. All of them were like, hey, man, can't wait to have you back in the building. Don't count this as a redshirt year. You're going to have to be ready to go. So I have to be the one that calls my client and be like, hey, man, don't pop champagne yet. Don't pop champagne yet. Like, it's a long 24 hours that you got to clear waivers. A lot's going to happen.
This is like me during high school prom season, by the way.
Yes,
just like,
yes. No, it really is. Yeah.
And maybe. You're like my third backup, Phil, but that's
fine. And all of them are like, the coaches told me I'm coming back. I'm like, listen, I understand that. But sometimes the coaches, 90% of the time, aren't the ones making this decision. It's the front office. And sure enough, both those players ended up not signing back to that practice squad. And I had to make both those phone calls of like, hey, buddy, how you doing? Good, how are you? Got some bad news. And like, lucky enough, I was able to get another guy in another team's practice squad after hustling and working and talking with scouts and getting things going. The other one, not so lucky, right? And then they're both just kind of like, I had a grown man that I had so much respect for look me in my eye and tell me I'm coming back. And this is kind of my first welcome to the league, rookie.
Yeah,
like the liars lie and the lies tell the lies. Like, it's just the way it goes. And that's in draft time. That's during this time. And it doesn't stop here. It's throughout your entire career. It's just the nature of the business and what it is. And I tell my guys, you never send teams away with salt ever. You never, ever, unless your name's Alex Boone, you spike a printer on your way out. But most of the time, you never send the team away with salt because you never know what's going to happen. In 2 weeks, say three O-linemen blow their legs up and they need another tackle that knows their system, they're going to call and claim you off their practice squad and bring you back. But if you left that place burning it on fire, they're not going to bring you back. I mean, 2 years ago, we had a client that was on the Rams practice squad for 2 years. They're going to put him back there for the third year. And we're like, you know what? We're out of here. We're jumping ship. We're sending you to another practice squad. Goes to Kansas City's practice squad. He's there for 3 weeks. They have three linebacker injuries in L.A. They end up claiming him off the Kansas City practice squad, put him on active. He's there because they had a good relationship with us as an agency, with him as a player. Gets on their active, is on active all year. This year he's going to be starting for him, right? So you just never know. You can't burn bridges in this league. You can't do it, right? Because you never know in free agency.
Unless you're Alex Bone, of course.
Like, but especially as a young player, because you never know. Free agency, guys getting cut all the time. Like, it's never bad to have at least one person in the organization that's like, I liked that guy. He did things the right way. He was a professional. He wasn't a jerk off or he wasn't an amateur. Like, he handled his business the right way. It's a huge part of the chess game that you have to play between front office and player and coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's good in any business. Let's be honest. There's a lot of times we want to spike a printer on the way out, but you can't. Like, you have to be grown enough to not do it. And I think that's the one thing that when you get into this business, you have to understand that not everything you hear is true. So not all the fucking things that you give back have to be true either. But you do have to leave with a smile and the handshake and say thank you for everything, right? You don't have to mean it. I knew a lot of guys that were like, dude, I hate this place, but I'm going to go up there the same as everybody else and be like, thanks for the whole year. Thanks for the checks. Appreciate everything. Hopefully I'll see you down the road. Because Jay's right. And the league now especially, they don't care. I think before, you know, there was times where in conference people would try and pull practice squads from each other to try and get vet things. But now it's like they're going all over to find people. They don't care. They want the best talent. So if you leave, and two, this kind of spawns into – you might be talking to a scout at one point, and in 5 years, he's a GM. And if you leave that dude with salt, and now he's a GM, what do you think he's telling all the other GM friends? Like, you don't know where people are going to go in this business. It happens everywhere. Players are turning into coaches. They're turning into GMs. It's almost like you have to be just cool all the time around everybody, because all of a sudden some guy that was a low-level assistant saw you blow up. Now he's the assistant GM somewhere and it's your contract year, and he's like, dude, I was there with that dude and so-and-so, and that dude is a problem, all right? We don't want that. It's going to be bad. All of a sudden that little bit goes into the GM's ear, like, how do you know this? Well, I was there with him. I saw it. Ah, tell me more. All of a sudden, you don't know what people know. And that's why people in this business get screwed so bad, is because they don't realize that everyone around them is a player. They might be low level right now, but in 4 years, that's going to be the assistant to the dude. And what is he going to be telling him? You want them to always be like, he was the first one in, the last one out. Never saw him in the training room. Worked his ass off. Yes, all the time. Never heard no out of his mouth. Played like a tough guy. Like, these are what you want people saying. You don't want them like, dude, we piss this guy off, he's not going to play for 4 weeks. Like, that's what you don't want.
And it's also why we tell guys in the recruiting process, like, you have to have an agent that you trust, because we are really the only ones that will tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not, right? Like, the fact that I had to tell my client, like, who was so excited that he was going back to the practice squad, he couldn't believe that, like, super pumped. I had to be the one that was like, hey, simmer, this isn't real, right? And that's not something he wanted to hear, but he knew from the beginning that's who I was and that I played this game. I've been lied to my face, looked in my eyes and told me, and I'm conditioned to it. But, you know, you have to understand these young players, they're not conditioned to just being straight up lied to. Right. And sometimes it's not even their fault. Sometimes the coaches are just telling them what they know, you know, but you can get really jaded really quickly in this league and you just have to have thick skin about it.
So why? Because they came from college where nobody told any lies and everything was okay, honey. You're so pretty. I love you. Go make a lot of money now. And then they turn around and go, thank God that guy's gone. Jesus Christ, who's next? Come here, pretty. You look so pretty. And then you go to a league where everyone, all they see is the ugliness on you. And they're like, God, you're so dirty and ugly. Like, go take a shower. You're like, coach, I don't think I can watch this film anymore. They're like, then you clearly don't belong. Get the hell out of here, stupid. And you're like, okay, I guess I'll leave. But Jay's right. Like, when they tell you, and I used to see it with guys, they would come down or you would run into them. They'd be like, dude, they were going to bring me back on P-Squad. I'd be like, they tell you that? They told me that they want to. I'd be like, okay. They didn't tell you they're gonna? No.
Okay. Mm.
You're like, man.
Totally going to buy you that engagement ring. Totally. Oh, yeah, I haven't been to the store yet.
It's
but
at home.
It's on my list.
I left it at home. Tomorrow, we'll call your agent. We'll set it all up. You go out, get dinner with the old lady, and you're like, this is great. Next day, no phone call.
It happened to me with the Vikings. My exit meeting in 2017. At the end of the year, they're like, hey, you played a lot for us. Super excited. We're going to put a tender on you. You know, you'll be back here. No problem. I'm at the O-line trip in Miami, and it's during combine time, and my agent called me. He goes, just got to meet with the Vikings. They're not going to tender you. It's like, oh.
And you were on a trip with, like, the other Vikings offensive line.
Yeah, it was our end-of-the-year trip. And so, like, I took the phone call, went back into dinner, and I was like, well, boys, it was really fun, but I won't be here next year. And it was just kind of one of those things. It's just like, yeah, I mean, at that point, I was in year five, so I was like, I get it. Like, I mean, nothing's set in stone until the ink is dry, right? Until the ink is dry on the contract, nothing is set in stone.
God. Hey, let me ask the first dumb football question here, which is kind of the format of that this podcast has taken. And we'll get to... You guys have sent a bunch of fun, dumb football questions. Keep sending them in the YouTube comments, and we'll read them to the guys here. But, you know, we've gotten a little bit of a glimpse thanks to Hard Knocks over the years. Like, there's a clip that resurfaced in the last couple of days of Mike Tannenbaum, you know, 12 years ago, cutting Kevin O'Connell. And just flat out telling him very awkwardly, you know, we had higher hopes for you, but, you know, you just got beat out and whatever. And Kevin O'Connell was, you know, he was probably raging inside. But just like Alex said, it's like, oh, I love my experience here. Thank you so much. You know, here's a handshake. So my question is, aside from what we sort of see a little bit behind the curtains on Hard Knocks, what is the actual cut day like? Are GMs generally good or bad at it? Like, how do they – what is it like for players on actual training camp cut day?
So I've only been actually cut twice on cut day. First one was my rookie year, and they fed me the song and dance of, we're going to sign you back to practice squad. And lucky enough, it was true for me, right? And so, like, I didn't – but and then the second time was when I got cut in Carolina, and I was injured, right? I was injured, and it's one of those things where you're walking around the locker room all day, and you're seeing dudes pack their bags up in literal trash bags, and they're just leaving, and you'll never see them again. And you're just looking for the guy known as the Reaper. Right, every team has one. He's the Reaper. He walks around with a clipboard, and he walks into the locker room. And you make eye contact with him, like, "Hey, asshole, you better not look at me." Right? Like, don't you even look at me? Right? And then they'll move on. But I got it. I got yanked one time. I was in the weight room. I was getting a lift in, and they came in. They're like, "Hey, Rivera and Marty Herney want to see you." And sure enough, I walked in there, and they were just basically like, "Hey, you're gonna get injury released. We have too many guys, this, that, and the other thing. You did a great job. You were going to make our team if you weren't hurt, blah, 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 blah." Again, you're just kind of like, okay, here we go. And I was so pissed off, I got in my car and drove 18 hours back to Nebraska from Carolina straight. Just so upset, right? And, I mean, GMs are some are good, some are bad. Usually a lot of them understand that they can understand the temperature of the room, right? And that's because they have to do it. And, like, no one wants to tell a kid the dream is over. I don't think any GM or anyone takes pleasure in cutting people.
No.
You know, because it's not a fun thing to do, to tell someone you're just not good enough. You know, but at the end of the day, they have to understand it's a business. It's what this business is. It's as cutthroat as it comes, and they have to just be professional about it.
Agreed. I Jeremiah's same sentiment. I on cut days, I was never there at the facility. You never wanted to be around the facility. It was kind of the day to just stay away as much as you can. Don't go in for any reason. If you forgot something, you'll get it tomorrow. It's just, it's a rough, because you've been with these guys for so long, and some of them, you're just like, man, I feel so bad. This guy worked so hard, had no idea the whole time. I'd like to think that guys like John Lynch would be really good at it, being former players, that they would be a little bit more straightforward. You know, I feel like there's times where you hear about guys getting cut and things being said, and you're like, you know, a former player wouldn't have said that. Somebody that actually respects the game probably wouldn't have made a comment like that, wouldn't have backhanded you on the way out. You know what I'm saying? And it's just, it's one of those things where it's really hard in the moment because it is an emotional game and it's a physical game. And then all of a sudden someone's like, hey, by the way, you're just not good enough. Sorry, you got to go. And you're like, well, that hurt. And then they kind of throw something on top of it where you're like, that wasn't needed. You know, I think that sometimes that happens. And at times guys are a little bit oblivious to it. There were guys that were like, can you believe? And you're like, yeah, dude, coach has been asking for 3 weeks to fix this. You haven't fixed yet. What did you think was going to happen?
Like, yeah.
It's just like Jay said. If they want it done in the morning, it gets done in the morning. If you can't be there for the morning, then we'll see you next year. We'll see you next time. You know what I'm saying? That's how it goes. And you learn that quickly in the league when guys are like, hey, coach has had to say this twice to you. Fix it now. And you're like, oh, thanks, man. I don't know how I missed all that in the shuffle. And then all of a sudden, as a young player, you start to get it. Like, okay, if they want something fixed, fix it. But when the guys are like, I had no idea this is coming. And you're like, dude, you broke curfew. How did you not have an idea that this was coming down the old piper? You know, those are the ones where I'm like, I don't really feel bad about it. But the guys that came in, worked hard, did their work, and get cut, you just feel really bad for them. Because sometimes it's the end of the dream for them, you know. And you're part of that end of the dream, and they'll remember you forever. Because they're like, this was my one time in the league, and these were the guys I was with. And you're like, man, I hope it was fun. And that's why at the end of camp, we always try to go out and do stuff as an O-line before all that happened. And then at the end of the year, like Jay said, the teams are never the same. Never 2 years in a row can a team ever be the same. Somebody has always gone from a room. So it's like, at the end of the year, you talk about being on a trip with all the guys that you're with. I mean, your best friends, and all of a sudden you get the phone call like, hey, you're not going to be with those guys anymore. Pack it up. Let's go. You know, and that's really how it goes.
Did they kick you off the trip, by the way?
No.
Sorry, man.
You're not a Viking anymore.
I did go out and had one too many cocktails that night, though. I'll tell you that.
I'm sure everybody was pissed then. And everybody, because that's how we are. When one of the core guys is told you're not coming back and you're out with the guys, you're like, man, this sucks. I don't want to go back anymore. Like, this is... And you don't see it sometimes from afar. And all of a sudden, you're like, when you get older, you're like, man, I should have probably seen some of this stuff coming a little bit farther away.
It's also one of those things when you get traded or you get cut and then you get picked up by another team, that dynamic is really weird too. Alex, you can probably speak to this of being in the room, but like, I know when I got traded to the Vikings in 2015, I walked into that room. I was a second-year player, really didn't know what was going on. And I couldn't make any friends, and I couldn't really understand why no one wanted to talk to me. And a lot of it was the older guys obviously are in game week, and they're trying to get ready to go, right? I got traded week one. And so they're prepped on game week. And so I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be friends. And then all the other guys like that I got brought in that had been there that entire offseason, that entire training camp, and they got released, and they bring in this dude from San Diego, and they're like, I don't want to be friends with that guy. He took my spot.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and everyone else is like, he took my buddy's spot. Right, like it was actually a really lonely year for me in 2015 because like no one knew who I was, no one knew anything about me, and no one really wanted to be my friend because I came in and took a buddy's spot. Right, like it's a weird dynamic to come into because you want to come in and be like, prove yourself. I deserve to be here. I earned it. They wanted me, but the rest of the room, like you haven't earned any of the respect because they haven't seen you work. They don't know anything that you did, and you have to come in and really gain that room's trust during the season, which is really really hard to do.
And not only that, but you got to gain the trust of the whole team. And that's hard to do, too, because defensive players are like, week eight, like, who the hell is this guy? Dude, he's been with us for like 8 weeks. So, what do you mean?
I have a funny story about that in Buffalo, right? So in Buffalo, I got picked up week four, right? So after I got cut by Carolina, I had a hamstring injury. I rehabbed it, went out to Buffalo, worked out on a Friday. And they were like, hey, we're going to sign you on Monday after our game. And so they signed me on Monday. And then I'm there on Tuesday. So our first Wednesday practice, right? It's a full pad practice. And there's this D lineman that is just, him and I are just going after each other, right? Like he's on the scouty, I'm on the scouty, and like, or he's on the twos and I'm running the scouty, and we're just going after it. And it's a goal line period. And I end up pushing him over a pile and he gets up and starts swinging, right? So I start swinging, and we're fighting, and as we're fighting, we're realizing no one is coming to help either one of us, right? Like, we're both just sitting there fighting like idiots, right? And so then, like,
hold me back.
Eventually, like, ends, right? Because eventually, like, all right, dumbasses, get back in the huddle. And then after practice, I went up and just kind of shook his hands, like, hey, man, sorry, I'm new here. Like, I just got here. And he goes, oh, yeah, I just got here on Tuesday, too. And so both of us were brand new to the team. No one knew who we really were. And I could just picture the rest of the team being like, who are these idiots?
Yeah.
Like, they just got here. They're fighting each other, right? And it ended up being Jordan Phillips from Miami, and who's with Buffalo. And so, like, we actually became pretty good friends after that. Just because one of those things where it's like we were just fighting. It was like watching the two new kids fight that no one had any skin in the game whatsoever. They were just like, oh,
they can fight to the death and no
like,
one cares.
No, we'll just figure it out. Like, people were probably like, I don't even know. Who's 74 and 97? Who are those guys?
Do they even play on this team?
Yeah. I just want it noted that both of you went in with the right mentality. We are going to fight until somebody pulls me out. And that is the fucking problem nowadays, is nobody goes in with the right mentality. Like, Jay just told you, I went in day one and a fight broke out and I knew I had to start swinging. Why? Because that's the mentality of the O-lineman. And if you don't swing, what's going to happen? You're going to get cut. Why? Because a fight broke out your first day and you got bitched out by some D-lineman whose first day it was too. And the two of you didn't even know the rules and you didn't even swing. But your rules in your head should always state that if I get swung on, I'm swinging back. Like, that's how it goes. That's why I find this awesome.
Yeah, and day one, I was like, I ain't going to get punked by anyone.
No.
I'm in year five.
You know the rules.
Like, I'm in year five. Like, I'm not a rookie, right? Like, I'm not a rookie. I'm a vet. I've played in NFL games before. Like, I'm not going to get punked. And he thought the same thing, right? And it's just – it was funny. McDermott actually came up to me afterwards. He was like, I like that. And I was like, thank you, coach. Thank you, sir. Right? Like, and it set the tone for the kind of player that I was going to be, right? And you have to – and I earned respect in the O-line room. Right, I earned respect in the O-line room where all those guys were like, hey, all right. Like, the next day, they're like, I see you. I see you 74. Like, they didn't even know my name yet. Like, I see you 74. Right? It's like, it's just one of those things where it's like, it's the mentality I had as an undrafted mentality, which is I don't take shit from no one. Right? I've earned everything I've been given. There's a reason they cut that dude and brought me in here. Right? Like, I'm not going to just back down. Like, I'm here to take this job and not let anyone take it from me. Yeah, and I ended up dressing the next week. Like, that's just. You have to have that cutthroat mentality in the league or else you will not last.
That's why I think people don't understand how the league really is. Is that's how it is all everywhere. Like, if a fight breaks out and I'm in the middle of it, I guess I'm going to have to swing back. I got stuck in the middle of this. But then all of a sudden, every coach on the side is like, yo, great job. Yeah, I love that shit. Like, that's what you want. You want the coaches pulling you aside. Sure, in front of the team, he's going to cuss me out. You know what this is going to cost us in the game? 15 yards, you stupid shit. You're like, all right, whatever, dude. But then he pulls you aside. He's like, yo, for real, though, that shit was awesome.
Yeah. Well, what did you think about Stefanski's rule in Cleveland with the joint practices? Did you see that rule?
No. What's
where, like, so, like, it was the last preseason game, and it was joint practices with, I can't remember who it was. Maybe. But he came out, and he's like, I made a rule this week to make sure there was no fights, because there had been so many fights in joint practices up to this point, right? Like, there's that brawls.
Fuck, yeah.
And he literally goes, here's the rules. If you're a starter and you get in a fight, you have to play in the last preseason game, even though none of the starters are playing. If you're a young guy fighting for a job and you get in a fight, you will not be allowed to play in the last preseason game. I was like, that's the best way to – I've never seen a better way to –
You could have punched – That's better than a fine,
dude,
right?
If I was a young guy, if I was a young guy and someone started swinging on me, I'd have just sat there with my hands behind my back and be like, I'm playing in this game. There ain't no well. And if you're a starter, the last thing you want to do is be the only one out there. The only starter out there. Like, the whole one on the side would be like, hey, was those punches –
eighth-year guard just sitting out there.
Were those punches worth it? Were those punches worth it 9-on-7, huh? Were they worth it? I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was the greatest rule ever.
I've always thought that, hockey's had fighting in the actual games for a long time. And I've always kind of clowned on it because it's like, okay, so the game just stops. Like, two guys just drop their gloves and everyone just watches until one of them hits the ice. So, you know what?
Yes.
I've been missing the boat on this. We need this in football.
No.
Where everyone circles around. You drop your helmets, you crack your knuckles.
Mac, you're going to go from one guy dropping his helmet in a fight to another guy dropping his helmet, and now his friend's going to stick up for him, and his friend's going to – you're going to have
You win the fight, your team gets 2 points or something.
Listen,
let's put it on the
scoreboard. You have to understand this too. Hockey players love them to death, think they're tough as nails. I think they're all fantastic. you put a bunch of NHL hockey players in a room with random people, you really can't pick them out different-wise. Now imagine, well,
they're not like bowl, they're bow-legged,
right? But like, other just than like that, physically, like now imagine like Zach Martin and Jeffrey Simmons getting in a fist fight.
Yeah,
one of them's gonna get really hurt. Like, you're gonna land one of those punches and shatter like an orbital bone and like have traumatic brain injuries because like the force in which these dudes can fight are not the 165 pound hockey player. It's a 320-pound man that benches 600 pounds that is going to punch you in your teeth, and you're going to lose your jaw.
This, like, by the way, what you've just described, so you're like boxing was the most, but it was like boxing, horse racing, and baseball were the most popular sports like 60 years ago, 100 years ago, and boxing's kind of died. I am more interested in boxing now that it's like, let's put a YouTuber against Floyd Mayweather, or like, let's put Adrian Peterson's going to fight Le'Veon Bell. Like, they don't know how to box, but fuck, I'll pay $50 to watch like people that I know get in a ring and fight. Yeah. We're going to put, this is how UFC started back like 30 years ago. There were no weight classes.
Right.
It would just be like, here's a jiu-jitsu expert against a sumo wrestler.
Yep.
And they have a 30-minute time limit, and one of them's probably going to die.
Well, that was like, know? What was it? The backyard stuff with Kimbo Slice.
Oh,
yeah.
Those backyard ballers, you're just watching Kimbo Slice.
Kimbo
just
Slice on YouTube,
dude,
yeah.
Just knocking dudes' teeth out, right? And then they put him in an octagon, and they were like, oh, he can't actually fight.
Like, he was like blown up after 45 seconds. But yeah, like I'm
fighting
stones
fighting,
in the glass house.
Fighting
by the
can
way.
Never happen in the NFL. No. Too many big, powerful humans. Too many of them.
Okay, I've got some dumb football questions from our YouTube audience here. Let's start with this one from Aiden Hoke. He says, "How do players and teams deal with physical peaking?" So speaking of MMA, he says, "An MMA fighter isn't at their physical best all the time. They train to peak at the fight. Same with like Tour de France or other athletes. So with the season being months long, how do you balance your physical abilities? Is that what backups at some positions are for? Do you go into certain games at your best? Like, I guess, how do you peak physically when you're supposed to?
When you're peaking physically, normally they try to get you to hit the peak at the beginning of the year. And that's what camp is for, just kind of ramp you up. They start hitting you more with different types of lifts. But once you start the season, you're done peaking. There is no more peaking. You are maintaining. The whole job of the strength coach is to maintain your physical strength, or at least keep it up there as high as he can. Because you have to remember, while you go into the season squatting 550 pounds, by week six, you can't put 225 on your back. So you're like, hey, we have to be smart. We have to find different ways to work this body part. That's why all of a sudden we started using pit sharks, or we'll start using Kaiser bells and stuff like this. Like, everything becomes a lift, and it's on the strength coach's job to be creative. These guys can never run. Why? Because if they are, they're in a game. That's the only time they're running is in a game. They can lift, but not very heavy. And if they do lift heavy, it has to be right after the game. And now, I was always told that Mondays was always squat day because you could still feel the Toradol.
Oh, yeah, baby. Toradol Mondays. That's a fact.
You woke up on Wednesday like, shoot me in the face.
Toradol Tuesdays. Toradol Tuesdays. Toradol Tuesdays. I didn't get out of bed. Nope.
You
didn't do it.
You were broken. But one of the things that I found was being in – dad was that the more active I was on Tuesday, the better I felt by Wednesday. So I always became the one that was involved in like taking the kids around and moving around. My wife always used to make me go to the mall on Tuesday because I'd be like, I just don't want to move. She'd be like, let's go to the mall, I'll get you lunch. I'd be like, oh, I'm coming, give me 20
I'm trying
to
vision Booney 320 pounds at the Galleria.
Oh my god, don't get me started. A Cove over there, I used to crush some lunch.
Oh.
How about Restoration Hardware? You ever been to the top of that place? Don't get
talk
me
dirty.
Start, right? And all of a sudden, or you just go to a Lion's Tap up the street, and I'd be like, that's good enough for me. But, dude, it is hard. And so that's why when you start thinking about, like, as a real pro, like as a rookie, you're not a real pro because you're like, dude, I made it. I'm going to go eat whatever I want and do whatever I want. I'm young. But like the minute you hit year two, you start to realize like, I don't feel as good as I did last year. My knees don't work as well as they do when I eat like this. All of a sudden, that's when nutrition becomes huge and you have to start eliminating things from your diet. Like, one of the rules I always had during the season was like no fried food other than Monday. like no fried food. I never drink pop anyway, so I didn't have to worry about that. Like no sugar during the week, because I always felt like if I had some, it made me play really slow. So it was just like meat, vegetables, fruit, and grains. That was it. And then you see as you go on, guys in the league, as I started to leave, got way more serious. Like with Russ, it was like I was – when I first got there, I was put in the stadium, and that was back when there was no fans. And so we had to sit in the suites, and so it was like two players to a suite. And so I got put in one of the suites with his medical staff doctor, and so she was watching him the entire game, like through all these computers and monitors and like elevating him and trying to figure out what was wrong. And I was like – this is like the PFF of fucking like medicalness. Like you have analytics for everything.
This is for Russell Wilson. For Russell Wilson.
And I was like, oh my goodness. Like guys are so serious. And like you would play, I played with Larry Fitzgerald, and he was another one who like the food at Arizona was great. I loved it. It was phenomenal. But he had his own like thing going on where he knew the chefs, and he was like, yo, this is, and his food was just like perfectly cooked. But then you look at him and he's such a specimen. And when he's told to like run really fast, he's just okay. And then you see other guys and they're like, give me a second, I gotta get warmed up. Like you can see who takes care of their body and who doesn't. And you're starting to see that guys that don't are getting cut faster because their team's starting to see it. They're starting to take more intake on guys. Like when I got there, body weight was the only thing people cared about, right, Jay? You gotta weigh in on Tuesday, you gotta weigh in on Friday. Why? Because if Tuesday's weight's good, we're not guaranteed that your crazy ass isn't gonna go out and eat a bunch of ice cream and be fat for the game. So we gotta re-weigh in, right? And then now all of a sudden it's become, let's test their body fat and let's see where their body fat is at the beginning of the year and let's see where it is at the end of the year. And even so more to this, and this is more my theory, and I don't know, I've heard this a few times, but they're putting metrics on guys now where they can see how fast you're moving and how well you're moving. And now it's starting to become, what else are you using that for? Like, I get what the science behind it is too, but there has to be a scary thought in everybody's mind that they're also watching how slow am I deteriorating. Hey, oh, listen, yeah. From week one to week 17, this is what we saw on these monitors. Let's see what happens when he comes back this year. We'll put it on for camp and see if anything happens. Like, it's just another way to watch, guys. So that's why it's like you have to always combat that with, I eat right, I do right, I'm in bed, I'm eating everything. Like, because they're constantly finding ways to find better athletes.
Is that what those catapult things are for? Yes. Yeah, you know, that was like a big thing. People saw Kyler Murray was like, he was shirtless and he had the catapult thing. People are like, what is he? Is he wearing a bra? It's like, these have been around for 10 years, I'm pretty sure, right? It's like measure, tracking, like, motion tracking.
They're tracking how much distance are you running during the week in practice, right? How many yards are you covering? How fast are you going? Max acceleration, full speed, all those things. And yeah, it's just a metric to like, A, it's said they're using to like make sure the manager workload,
which they do sometimes, right? To manage your workload, right? You've ran this much this week. We need to cut it down to this, so we're going to take this many reps out. You're like, all right, son of a bitch, you're actually using this thing. This is great.
The other thing to go back to, like peaking physically, I learned this the hard way. After my first year, like I was on practice squad, and then I got active. And I played my last two games. It's so, like, I finished this season on like this super high of like, I can do this, right? And I started crushing, working out super, super hard, like mid-January, right? Like absolutely getting after it. Sled pushes, squatting heavy, da-da-da. And I felt like, okay, I got to come into OTAs like physically ready to roll, right? And I peaked too early. I peaked in like May physically, right? And by the time camp ended, I had taken so many reps and everything, like I couldn't keep weight on no matter what I ate. And I realized like I had worked myself too hard earlier in the year. Like, I always tell guys, you need to come into OTAs at like 60, 65% physically of where you want to be when you show back up in August, right? Because if you peak early in May, it's like Boone said, you have to be able to peak in August, or really you don't want to peak till late August, right? You want to come into camp at like 90%. You want to peak week one, because that whole maintain thing, it sounds great, but in reality, it's how can I slow the decline? Right, it's how can I keep myself from declining at a rapid rate? How can I keep it from falling off the cliff? Because everyone's going to decline throughout the season. There's no way, shape, or form that you finish the season the same way you started it. Right, you always decline.
Are you the same weight at the end of the season?
No, I used to come into camp at like 315, and by the end of the season, I'm praying to hang on to 305, 303. Wow. Like,
right? You were 300?
Huh. Yeah. I mean, and the other thing too is like,
when he's a buck 90, just
from a different perspective of like being a backup, right? Like Booney's coming from a starter, and like I was a starter for a while, but for my majority of my career, I was kind of that backup sixth man. your workload is much different than the starter, right? Because you have to keep your body, you have to keep your body in physical, like that strength mode, so that when you do go in, like you're still as strong as you could be because you're not taking the reps on game week. Like you're taking, you have to take your lifts, your run. You lift an extra day of the week when you're not a starter, because you have to keep that strength up because you're not getting the same workload that those other guys are getting on Sundays, right? So the physical peakness is way different for a backup or even a practice squad player than it is for a starter. Like there's levels to it of how heavy are you still developing, right? Practice squad, I lifted 4 days a week, right? Because I was like, I ain't playing on Sunday, so I can crush myself throughout the week and then I'll recover on the weekend, right? Like there's just different levels of physical preparedness that each player has to find for themselves. But I think the biggest thing is just making sure guys don't burn themselves out in the off season, so that by the time the season rolls around and it's week 12, your body's just crashing.
Yeah.
Like, it's impossible to maintain that for 6-8 months. Like you have to just say, hey, I have a 4 month window here that I got to try and maintain. And it's just a matter of learning what that looks like. And really a lot of guys don't get to do it until their second year, because rookie year, you're going through combine, all-star games. Like there is no ramp up rookie year. It is just full pedal to the wall. You have to really learn that in years 2 and 3 of how that ramp up is different for everybody, for nutrition and training and all of that stuff.
All right. This next question comes from social media here. Just saw this floating around a couple weeks ago. Now, you guys played in the NFL, so you might be in a little bit of a different situation than the normal person here answering this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. All right. You get $1 billion right now, tax-free, dumped into whatever account you want. Here's $1 billion. But the catch is, peak Mike Tyson in his prime, prime Mike Tyson, will hunt and try to kill you for the rest of your life. But you get to use the $1 billion however you want, resourcefully, to try and fend that off from happening. Do you take the $1 billion?
Just have a bunch of books surrounding your house, because I don't think Mike can read. Or is that Mayweather? One of them. They might both.
I think probably both.
I think I'd take the billion.
I'd take the billion.
I mean, there's enough you could do to protect yourself at all times. I mean,
you'd always be on a boat, or like hire a black ops security team, I'd have the best security team
of all time for the rest of my life. And also, like, it's $1 billion. Like, that is so much money. Like, you could do anything with $1 billion.
Could also spend it like on the best hand-to-hand combat training.
That doesn't matter.
Why are you going to fight him? You have $1 billion. Get somebody else to do it.
I agree. I would take a billion.
I would almost hire a body double and just have him be with me everywhere. And if all of a sudden I see Mike, I'm like, go. If you run over there and I'll run away. And then like if he kills him, they'll be like, oh, I'll just hire another one.
God, but wouldn't it be great, though, if you could train yourself? Like, take 12 months, train yourself to end the problem, you know?
I don't know, dude. Mike Tyson is prime. Any of us, I don't care how long we train, I'm not sure any of us would be able to take out Mike Tyson in his prime.
Yeah.
I really don't. I mean, even if we trained for years, I mean, maybe if we started when we were like 20, 18.
That's true. Now you're like, I'm 32.
Like, I don't care if I train. If I train for 8 years, I'm still going to be 40. And if Mike Tyson's hunting me around, like, we're thorough that. Like, there's no way. I'm going to get my tiger on him. I'm going to find him. Like, there's no way.
I'm going to draw a tattoo on his faith after I'm done kicking the bath, too.
There's no way. I mean, the hard part would be he'd have to try and say my address. And I'm going 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77, 77,
right. I got one more for you guys here. This is from
That's like Everson. Everson used to have that lisp, dude. Yeah. I'll never forget one time he came on the sideline. And again, I'm not trying to drag Everson. He goes, hey, Thurl. See that spin move? Thack, spin move. And I was just like, yep, hey, sure thing, Ev.
He used to be so calm when he would talk to it. That's exactly Thack.
You know, super random, not even a story, that, just an anecdote. Remember the night that the NBA shut down at the beginning of the pandemic? Like Rudy Gobert, he got COVID or something. So when that game was on TV that night, yeah, this touches everyone's stuff. That night, my wife and I were at Crave in West End, sitting right next to, just randomly, literally right next to Everson Griffin, just hanging out. We're all just like eating steaks, whatever, watching TV together. You know, he's just pointing up at the TV. Thumb shit, you know?
Dude, Ev was the best. I loved Ev to death. I love that guy.
It's a fun guy, man. Mijo, wish that guy well. I got one more for you guys here from Dr. Petrola. And we got, I don't know, we got 3-5 minutes left here.
We got plenty of time.
You haven't even had to jump on an emergency call yet. So
not yet. That means good things right now.
So Dr. Petrola says, starting from the rookie season, how many years does it take to fully form offensive linemen, generally speaking, from when you enter the NFL to when you are like fully formed, whatever that means?
Man, I don't know that there's actually an answer to that. I think that every year you're starting to learn more stuff.
So many different factors.
There's so much stuff that you learn, and there's so much new lingo that you pick up, and there's so many new things. But I would say that an offensive lineman, and I'm not trying to rag on anybody, but I just don't think that there's the development of offensive linemen is really there. I think that a lot of
it is. In college, you mean?
Correct. Which is hard because, and we've talked about this, right? College coaches have so many people to please. Hey, pretty, you're so pretty, right? But you're pretty too, honey. And in the NFL, it's like, why does this dude need me to tell him he's pretty every day? Dude, you are ugly. Figure it out. Like, and then all of a sudden, it's like, what happens then? And I would say now, under the proper development, it would probably take a good 2 or 3 years to make a good offensive line. Because I say that knowing this, you have to go out and fail a ton before you can learn. And that's what you're going to learn in those 2 years. You're going to learn all the wrong things to do, which is going to key in all the right things to do. And that's how you learn such good instincts, is by messing it up, and then your body goes, I'll never forget that. I will never forget that I need to get depth on this set. Why? Because I got beat. And that's what separates a pro from an amateur, right? And I was talking to my son's team about it the other day. The sixth grade boys. An amateur does it until he gets it right. A pro does it till he can't get it wrong. And that's what the difference between us is the minute it hits you instinctually, you're like, I got it. I figured it out now. But sometimes it's a really harsh lesson because you got to go out and get your ass dragged through the weeds for a long time. But then you stand up and you're like, well, now I know a lot of different systems, and I understand why people are doing this to us, and I understand why they're attacking us the way that they are, and I understand how we can counteract this now. And it's like, it's a bunch of chess pieces being moved around the board, and it's how long can you figure out the game while getting your ass kicked? And that's what's the hardest thing, is while you're losing, people are like, hey, you're learning. And you're like, am I, or am I just losing? What's the difference? And they're like, well, are you figuring out what you should be doing? Yeah. Are you trying to apply it? No. Well, do that, stupid, and then you'll be figuring it out. It's like there's so many steps to it that makes it hard. That's why you can't be like, oh, one training camp, you should be good. Dude, you don't even know what's going on after a training camp.
I also think a big factor to it, too, is how many O-line coaches in the league have you had? You know, I think if you can be in the same system with the same OC and the same O-line coach for 3 years, rookie year, second year, third year, the beginning of that third year, you should have it pretty well dialed in, right? But the problem is becoming, you're seeing the coaching carousel, you're seeing the head coaching carousel. Like, if all of a sudden you were this regime's guy for a year and a half, and then they get fired, and you bring in another guy who's now you're not his guy, he didn't draft you, maybe you're in a completely different system now, like, and guys are like, oh, that guy was a bust. It's like, well, you got to remember, he got drafted 2 years ago to a power system, and now you threw him into this outside zone, wide zone system, like that's probably not best for him, right? And so then it's like you get cut, you get brought up somewhere else, now you're learning someone else's lingo, someone else's techniques. Like that's where you really see a lot of young guys fail, is when you see multiple coaches and multiple systems that they're in over and over again, because they can't fail. Because as soon as they're trying to fail, it's something brand new, right? And so now they're actually losing instead of failing because it's not into their skill set, or they're trying to learn a whole brand new skill set. Like, there's so many different factors that play into that. But I really do think you see guys that are going to be stick in this league, like starters, guys are going to stick around for this league. If they're still contributing in a big way in year three, then they're going to stick around for years 6, 7, and 8, as long as their bodies can. It's getting through those first 3 years that is incredibly important and incredibly hard.
You just hit, like, it's kind of like a graph or whatever, where your mind is going to keep getting sharper every year until you're like 80 or whatever, right? You're going to keep getting sharper. So as long as your body can stay, starts to decline, you know,
it's funny you bring that up. It's a weird curve, and the NFLPA actually pulls it up sometimes, and it's the curve of like what you're expected to be. And in the beginning, it's super strong and fast, right? So you want strong, fast guys while your intelligence is down low, but somewhere in the middle, they're going to cross over where all of a sudden you start to get broken, but you know a lot. And then you know a ton, but you're not very good. And then all of a sudden you become savvy. And that's why the curve kind of crosses over. And it's that curvature where it crosses over that 3-4 year mark that's like, hey, if you can figure it out now, You don't need to. You'll figure out that you don't need to be as strong as you think you do. You don't need to squat 700 pounds. You don't need to be able to bench 1,000. You just need to know where to be and when to be there. And from there, coaches will teach you great technique. They'll teach you things to learn, like how to do a lot of hand-to-hand combat, right? A guy's running at you with his hands out. What do? We'll smack him away. We'll grab him. We'll pull him in, like all these things. But it's that curvature point where people are looking at you like, okay, what does he know? How smart is he? We get that he probably doesn't run a 4.5 anymore, but what does he know? Does he know enough to move forward? Yeah, good. Here we go. He's our guy. And if it's like, no, he can't recite the offense back to us, get rid of him then. He's clearly in a decline. He can't figure it out. He's on his way out. It's harsh, but it's the reality of being a pro.
And that's why quarterbacks, like the fact that quarterbacks physically now, because of the rules, they can play into their mid to late 30s, early 40s. They've racked up 15 years of institutional knowledge, and the game has slowed down, and they're still near their peak physically. Like,
well, you know what helps them the checkmate. Most is when they take those Tuesdays off and right back to the fan mail.
I, for one, could use 24 hours off from work on a Tuesday.
Walter, I would love to write you back. I didn't.
Dude,
have a chance
I got
to look up.
I got stuck with him in my fantasy draft as my quarterback.
Oh, come on! It's Kirk O'Chains. It's Kirk O'Chains. Let's go.
But I also took Hawkinson, and I was like, "Well, okay, let me play some chess here." Kirk is in a 1-year contract, which means Kirk ain't gonna want to get hit. So, what's he gonna do? Just check it down to TJ Hawkinson all year.
But TJ Hawkinson hasn't practiced in full in a month because of an ear infection and a low back, or maybe a contract.
He'll
I don't know.
He'll still be fine.
We'll see.
Either one, he's going to be out there week one. You don't think he's going to be out there week one catching tutties? You're
raging.
Out of your mind.
Did you not just listen to the agent say that when the scout, and I mean scout, said be here tomorrow, he was like, done. What do you think happens when the GM calls you and goes, hey, you're feeling good, right? Yeah. No, I'm feeling way better now. Feeling way better. Yeah, good. We thought you weren't ready to go week one, which meant bad things for you later on. Okay, just double checking.
Good to go.
I'm good.
I'm excited for Fat Guy Fantasy also to start week one.
Oh, we start tomorrow, right? Let's see who we got. Oh, who's playing tomorrow?
No, it's a week from tomorrow. Dummy. A week. Dude,
Kansas
you get a
City,
week.
Kansas City plays Detroit week one. I'll have the first guy up, Frank Ragnow.
I was going to say.
And then next, we're going to record next Wednesday, and we'll do some more, like, I don't know, we'll make some dumb predictions for the season, and we'll we'll send you all off into the 2023 NFL season.
All right, Mackie, I got to ask you before we break here, Gophers-Vikings.
Gophers-Huskers.
Gophers-Huskers.
That was on my list of dumb questions, because it is a dumb question.
It's coming.
Who's going to win between Gophers and Nebraska?
Give me a score prediction. What do you got?
What's the spread right now?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to that shit.
What time's
you either win or you lose, Mac.
Here's what I'm worried about. You guys have been able to study like 6 years of PJ Fleck Gophers film. We got nothing on you. It's a new coaching staff.
Now, I will say this. You have a little bit that our defensive coordinator came from Syracuse last year, who you guys did play in the bowl game.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of like schematics there.
You know what's funny? I will say this. You know, as a University of Minnesota alumni, love my school. We don't draw we're not filling like these 100,000 seat stadiums. So it's like a 50,000, 55,000 seat stadium or something like that. Maybe I'll call it 50,000. And it's sold out. And PJ Fleck, the Gophers coach, is thumping his chest like, this is the culture we've built. I guarantee you there's going to be 15,000 red shirts.
20,000 at minimum, 20,000 red shirts. This is the closest home game we play or away game we play.
I know.
There is no other away game that we play that is closer. The fandom couldn't be more excited right now. There will be 20 to 25,000 Husker fans in that stadium this weekend.
We have a tailgate lot.
That well?
You're welcome to come hang out and jump through a flaming table if you would like to.
Shut up. No one's asking you. I think Huskers win. I think Huskers win. I think Huskers win 24-17.
24-17. I mean, I just like the surprise factor is like the only thing that I would be scared about. And it is a big thing. It's week one. Weird things happen. But I'm going row the boat, Sky Yama, go Gophers. And it'll be, I'm going to say 31. They're going to light it up a little bit. 31 to 21.
When's the last time the Gophers scored 31 points?
Oh, dude, they'll light it up once in a while.
Okay. Yeah. Staking a beer.
Early in the season. They dropped like 31 on Ohio State a couple years ago.
Staking a beer bet?
On the 31?
No. Just staking a beer on straight up.
Oh, absolutely.
Staking a beer.
Yes.
Can I be a part of 100%. This?
100%. No.
Wait,
you'll get your chance.
You'll get your chance.
No. I'll split the bill with somebody. I'm in all the way.
How about you just pick
FOMO,
it up?
FOMO. can't be left out. I don't want to be left out.
Can I just come to dinner?
No, you can come to dinner.
You're going to be in the national championship game.
You can buy the apps.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, you can buy the calamari. Buy the squid.
I'm in for the calamari. Right. Somebody else has paid for my steak. I'm in.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, we got a steak and a beer bet here.
Hey, by the way, what time's this game on at? 3:30?
7 o'clock.
7 tomorrow night.
Who plays 3:30 on a Thursday?
D2.
Shut up.
Remember those Toledo games? And so you just see
Maction Tuesdays? Maction Tuesdays are the best. Football season's back, boys.
I thought you guys were in the MAC. My bad.
Shut up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We added USC and all those other crappy.
Oh, hey. Oh, Alex, I got something. Hold on 1 second here. Yeah. Oh, right there for you.
Good one, PJ. Why don't you make it a cool line?
Hey, go Big Red, baby. That's all I got to say. Go Big Red.
Go Big Red.
Go Big Red.